Science Faction is a science education podcast for adults only. It is not intended for children or monocle-wearing British nobility.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 305. Science Faction, I call BS.
Let's put on the show. Let's put on the show again for everybody. Make sure...
Bill, if you haven't been listening or following along, Damien has continued to lose every single episode of I Call BS.
There was a particularly egregious victory that was stolen from me.
Oh, you mean when you cheated with the Fonzie comment? Yeah.
I did listen to that episode.
Yes. Yeah. I was pretty pissed that he did that too. I wanted you to win, Damien. I wanted you to win that game. I was hoping you would do it. And you ran up to the finish line and dropped like a frog before you crossed it.
I beat the game and he had to invent a new rule on the spot.
A new rule? We discussed
Wait, over and over again. Didn't you prompt him to create the rule? You were like, the only way I could not win is if you create a new rule.
No. The rule has been around since the beginning of this game. It's been around for 6 years. He knows the rule.
If Greeks had been more creative, this is what Sisyphus would have been doing instead of pushing a fucking boulder up a hill.
And speaking of Sisyphus, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. I'd like to be called Sisyphus. That doesn't make sense. I just call me Sissy. Okay. I'll be Sissy for the rest of the show.
You will indeed. And our scientist of the afternoon, Bill. Bill, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I was trying to think of a good Greek god to be called today, but I can't think of one.
Poseidon? You got a good beard going. You got like a real strong beard. Or
Bill Achilles.
The UCSD mascot is Triton.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't call me Triton, though. That's dumb.
Yeah, I think I'll go Bacchus. I'm going to take Bacchus.
Sidey?
I feel like Poseidon? Bacchus is going to have a lot of fun. Yeah.
He does have a bottle of wine in his hand, and he's tied off with a fucking opiate needle hanging out of his arm.
Which is the one that's going around like a duck raping women? I think that was Zeus. All right.
Zeus would fuck animals.
Are you saying that I rape ducks?
No, you become a duck and rape women. Don't be a freak.
Nobody arrests the duck.
That was Howard the Duck's whole mantra.
I think I'll just stick with Bill.
All right, what was to say with Bill? All right, let's move right on to I Call BS.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
All right, I Call BS is the game where I read four science news articles to my panelists who compete to see which ones are real and which ones are BS, standing for bad science. The rules are pretty simple. All of the different...
I had never heard the Fonzie rule before.
The Fonzie rule has been established. I think that's the first rule I announced.
Thank you, Bill.
First and primary rule, if you make a Fonzie reference throughout the show, you are automatically...
I have a distinct advantage because I never watched that show.
Yeah, well, you lose 2 points. That's just... I mean, that's always been the rule. I don't know why it would be even negotiable. Yeah,
he makes more Fonzie references on this show than
I
do.
If I was playing, then that would be an issue.
Extra points for referencing?
Yes, but I can't tell you what that is. That's one of the rules.
I can't wait to discover them, too.
Also, all of the questions are independent variables. They can all be true, all false, or any combination thereof. And, of course, the tie goes to the scientist, which is only fair.
The rules don't matter. The only rule that Damien feels like I was kicked in the groin at the end of this.
You know, Damien, if you really did feel like you were kicked in the groin every time, maybe you'd start getting better at the game. Like, maybe if there was actually that negative feeling that you had when you had done this, you would just, you know, you'd study a little bit more, you'd read up on science
articles.
Or maybe
if he had some electrodes implanted in his brain, you could just stimulate the correct answer.
I've said this before, this is a longitudinal Milgram study, and anytime one of our fans tweets, stop the study, this will stop, and it will become a real game. Right. We just need one of our tens of fans out there to say stop. At Faction Science, by the way, tweet us.
No, nobody would ever want us to stop. All right, let's get right on to it. Article number one. Researchers have announced the successful development of a blood test for pain. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, and it's super accurate because they use a fucking huge needle.
Yeah, he's in pain. Try the balls.
Yeah. Wait, this is a knife. This is a fucking needle.
What if the test is just a tape recorder and is like, yeah, he's screaming the shit out in there. Like he's
yeah, you just take the blood, go into the lab, but really just listening to like the guy screaming.
I buy it. All right, and Bill.
So I can't say that I read this article, but I did see this article. So I'm like, I'm sure that it is science, but I have no idea what this blood test is or how it diagnoses pain or how you can even, how do you even frame diagnosing pain.
Right.
See, I was actually thinking, like, what if it wasn't blood? What if it was, like, semen? It was a semen test for pain. And so, like, you know, you collect the sample. Somebody goes in the other room, dips his finger in taste. He's like, this guy's hurting. This guy's in a lot of pain. He's got a lot of emotional pain.
Sexually repressed.
Deep scars. Clearly.
Yeah.
Come out, big guy. There's AIDS in this.
Tastes like AIDS. All right, article number two. The largest bee on Earth, originally discovered by the co-discoverer of evolution by natural selection, was seen again by science for only the third time in recorded history. Damien, is this science or bad science?
I'm going to say this is bad science because I know that Huxley was the co-discoverer of natural selection, and that guy was fucking terrified of bees. Bad science.
I mean, they did call him Darwin's bulldog. And bulldogs hate bees, so...
Wildly allergic to bees. You can catch them within a mile, especially the largest fucking bee.
That's frightening. I also saw this article. It's like a golf ball-sized bee, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So I'm worried that maybe it's not the third time, and so this is going to be wrong, but I'm going to say science.
All right.
Yeah, see, that was the thing. I saw a freakishly large bee, and I'm thinking, how is, in his question, did he fuck with us?
I think maybe, like, it hasn't been seen for 30 years or something like that, but the third time seems like a weird...
Factor fence was the 300th time.
Yeah. All right, article number three. A new study has found that small involuntary hand movements can be used to detect whether a person has learned something or not. Damien, is this science or bad science?
From my experience, unless you're teaching somebody how to give a better hand job, that is not the case. That's how you know they're listening, is that they're doing it involuntarily.
Oh, okay. That's like when somebody casually nods along with you without realizing they're doing it.
Yeah, but it's like just a movement of the wrist.
Do you take your penis out, or do they do it involuntarily?
I never put it away, baby.
Okay.
It's out right now. I can see it. There's actually a hole in this table.
Yeah.
I can see it.
We're sitting there. Let me present.
Davian's new line of pants called Glory Hole.
They are glorious. So I'm going to say it's bad science from my experience. It's more the head nodding,
okay,
which is a completely different lesson.
All right. And Bill.
This is basically like a tell in poker. Like if you were great at this and your competitor had their hands on the table, you could tell instantly what they had just
But for learned. Learning, not for lying.
Yeah. Okay.
It's wearing sunglasses upside down indoors. That covers up that tell.
I'm going to say science. I don't have a great rationale for why that is. But
it's unnecessary for this game, trust me.
I'm gonna call in on my natural scientist's intuition. That's
what are you, the president? My uncle was a scientist, so I'm naturally pretty good at it.
It's okay, Bill. I go with your gut.
All right, and lastly, article number four. New excavations of grave sites show that 4,000 years ago, people of the Iberian Peninsula had domesticated pumas and buried them with their dead leaders. Damien, is this science? Or bad science?
This is bad science. The people of the Iberian Peninsula did not bury their elders or leaders with pumas, but with sweet paella recipes.
Okay. I don't think there's any such thing as a sweet paella recipe.
You've ever had a dessert paella?
It's fish?
Dessert fish?
The recipe is like, fuck up making soup. Like, that's... All right. And Bill.
So this is way outside of my area of expertise, obviously, so I have no idea. But this sounds cool. And so I feel like this is the kind of thing that you would put in here just because it's cool. So I'm going to say science.
Now, obviously, I don't want to affect your answer at all, Bill.
Right? Stop. No. He said it. I said the goddamn keyboard.
He said he was going to say science. He hasn't said it yet. I'm just going to say this.
That is true. I am going to say science maybe at some point in the future.
I'm
going to
say this, Bill. There is the clue in there.
Which he has taken into consideration and given you an answer to.
Listen, Bill didn't know there was a clue. All right, it's fair of me to point out, Bill, that there's a clue in there.
Dave, you didn't know a fucking clue.
No, okay, now you know.
Okay, then I'd like to...
I do feel I could be cheating if I changed my answer now.
Oh, and the integrity of the game would be out there.
Yeah, no, yeah, trust me, I just checked with the rules coordinator. They said that wouldn't be cheating at all.
Yeah, I also maybe I'm stupid, but I just can't figure out what is the clue.
I'd like to.
All right, so Bill says bad science. All right,
I'd like the home address of the rules coordinator.
Okay, I will send it to you.
And his children's class schedule.
Oh man!
All right,
dark really quickly.
Somebody will die.
Let's go back and see how you guys did. Follow along at home and see how
you
did.
If you impress someone for long enough, they will do terrible things.
Article number one. Researchers have announced the successful development of a blood test for pain. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science, though it may be a little different than what you're thinking. They're not necessarily saying we're going to take a blood test and measure how much pain you have. They're going to take a blood test to determine your capability of pain and of experiencing pain. So we think of pain as kind of this subjective thing, but it's not, right? I poke you with a needle. I poke Damien with a needle. You might have very subjective interpretations of the pain that you feel from that. And that's going to have to do with your neurological structure and a bunch of other stuff. Well, some of the stuff that they found were certain biomarkers for particular receptors that are indicative of pain. The way they did this is they look at this large cohort of psychiatric patients who oftentimes have comorbidity with pain issues. And then they looked for specific biomarkers. And they found in people who have a lot of physical pain, they have certain markers that are represented overly so or more so than other people. Now, we don't know at this point whether these markers are the result of certain things. So you get traumatized as a younger person and you have this, or if it's just completely biological. You're just bad roll of the dice of genetics. You got twice the pain receptors somebody else. Sorry, it sucks to be you. They identified quite a few of these. What's really interesting about this is some of these...
argue that that's like one of the roles of an older brother figure perhaps to help you cope
desensitize that pain.
You have to Charlie horse the shit out of this.
That's exactly right. So this is important because that subjective and different experience of pain is part of the problem we have with alleviating pain. If two people get into a car accident and the damage is exactly the same to them, one might require a whole bunch of opiates and one might require very few. And if you give that person who requires very few too much, you might unnecessarily start them on a road to addiction. And so when it comes to pain management, just like we had talked about earlier on Sunday, I think it's a field that's really important and underlooked in terms of how do we manage pain without opiates, or in this case, with the least amount possible. And they've identified a whole bunch of pain receptors that seem to show when somebody is most likely to be incredibly sensitive to pain. And they found some of these that they had no idea was even involved in the whole process of feeling pain, but they didn't find it until they found a correlational association with large groups of people who have basically are very sensitive to pain.
Does the, like, is the first level of the test, like, did the person pass out when you pulled out the needle?
Yeah.
Okay, very low.
Yeah, right. So something to think about, by the way, and I always think about this. I have, you know, in that same weird metaphysical existential question you ask yourself, like, when I see the color red, is that the same thing you guys see when you see the color red? The color red is an objective wavelength of light that is a certain length, but that doesn't mean that my experience of red isn't your experience of green. That's the same thing with pain. We can both break our arm in the exact same fashion. It doesn't mean that we are feeling the same pain.
Or that we both will climax.
At the same time, right? Yeah. Well, when you're involuntarily giving somebody a hand job, you got to expect that you're going to get some negative repercussions every once in a while.
So this could be a part of like the next personalized medicine.
Exactly.
Like we know exactly what your pain tolerance is. So
and what
this.
Particular things are better for you. So some people, acetaminophen is going to be just great. You're not going to need to have any kind of opiates. Some people, non-steroid inflammatories are the best thing that you're going to need because of the type of pain receptors you have or the percentage of pain receptors you have of this type. And some people, yeah, we got to go with the opiates.
What if, like, you were at a very masculine image and you had, and you didn't, HIPAA laws didn't keep up with this, and it came out like, turns out your blood test came back, Mr. Bruce Willis, but it turns out you are a bitch. You can't handle pain at all. And it's going to be all over TMZ tomorrow.
Article number two, the largest bee on Earth, originally discovered by the co-discoverer of evolution by natural selection, was seen again by science for only the third time in recorded history. Damien thinks this is false. Bill thinks this is true. And this one is science. Damien Huxley was not the co-discoverer of evolution by natural selection. So it's called Wallace's giant...
Tim Huxley?
No. It was called Wallace's giant bee, named after its discoverer. You got to remember what was going on in the 1850s when Charles Darwin was basically studying and discovering the evolution by natural selection. He went out on the Beagle. He went to the Galapagos Islands where he saw the finches, and that kind of became the basis of a lot of his thought. But then he went back to England and basically sat down and wrote stuff for 20 years. And in this process of just sitting down and writing as an English gentleman does and being very exact, because he was a very exact scientist, and putting together these concepts, he was sharing them with people around him, but he had not yet published. Well, around the same time, a younger scientist, Alfred Russel Wallace, came to the same conclusion, evolution by natural selection. And he was floating his idea by a mutual friend of theirs, a guy who knew both Darwin and Wallace. And the guy was like, listen, bro, this is great. You're on to the one of the most important discoveries in all of biology. But just so you know, our buddy Chuck, he did this before you. So you guys should talk. And the way they did it, he set them up. got them together and basically said, you guys both discovered the same thing, you should publish together, which is what they ended up doing. They ended up coming out and kind of publishing at the same time, publishing together, so they didn't jump on each other's work. And Darwin, partly because he discovered it first, he still technically got it first, but Wallace made the exact same discovery. He didn't know about Charles Darwin's discovery. Partly because Darwin discovered it first, partly because Darwin was the more seasoned scientist, and also partly because he was just better. His write-up on The Origin of Species is amazing. It's a seminal work of science to this day. He was just kind of a better scientist, so he gets the credit for it, but technically they both discovered it independently.
When you were describing that conversation between Wallace and his super bro-y hookup, it was like, yeah. Bro, you gotta check bro. That out. I pictured it in some sort of Victorian by a fireplace or like an English pub. As soon as you said bro, I pictured them both in workout clothes at the gym, like doing curls.
Yeah.
Bro, dude. And then he motions over to Chuck, who's like on the squat right now.
Talk to Chucky Chuck.
Yo, what up, bro? Protein shakes and fitches, bro.
So like in the middle of the 1800s, middle of the 19th century, Alfred Russel Wallace is running around Indonesia and he stumbles across this fucking monstrous creature, which he called Wallace's giant bee, which, by the way, is also what Scottish freedom fighter William Wallace referred to his wife as when he was angry with her.
That's solid.
Thank you.
You deserve credit for that, despite all of your crimes against humanity in this game.
Thank you very much. So it's native to a very specific island chain in Indonesia, and it measures about 1.5 inches long with a 2.5 inch wingspan. It's a fucking monstrous thing. Could you imagine a bee coming at you like that?
Hey, what was a stinger like? Was it like the gorilla? Like, has the gorilla is massive, but has a small penis?
No, it's not like a honeybee type thing. Most bees don't sting. So this one, I think, lives in like termite mounds. And it's this just fucking huge creature, but it's terrifying looking. And so basically, Alfred Russel Wallace discovered this halfway through the 19th century, wrote it down, talked about it. No scientist found it for a very, very long time until 1981. In 1981, an entomologist named Adam Messer found some on a series of islands in Indonesia. So he basically rediscovered it. He took some pictures. He talked about it. Oh, here's this cool bee. Found it again. Science, here you go. And then he left. Group after group went back to those islands and could not find the bee. So again, it went 140 years or so in between its initial discovery
Is
and this
just
guy.
Dormant during
it's living
those
in
years,
like
or?
Termite mounds, and so you have to, it's not like out in the open. You wouldn't walk around and see a beehive. You have to dig inside of a termite mound
but
to find it.
Isn't it like flying around doing stuff?
It is flying from termite mound to termite round occasionally, but this is a very remote part of the world, and there's not a lot of people there. And you would have to catch it, you know, in between it going from one. Remember, it's not making its own structures. It's living in another animal structure, so you can't just go find the structure, right?
Okay. So it just invades its termite mound, then just eats whatever it can.
Exactly.
It's not like a beast of burden.
No, this termite. No. They don't have it yoked and harnessed.
They ride it bareback.
A bunch of scientists came after 1981 to the islands, could not find it. They kept looking for it. The rediscovery of it was just published by a very interesting group. It's such a kick. I actually read about this just for this story and then decided I think I want to join this group because they're right up my alley, a bunch of badasses. So it's called the Global Wildlife Conservation, which is a group that has a search for lost species program where they specifically go, here are a group of species, may or may not be extinct, like this bee was thought possibly extinct. Let's fucking go out and find them. So they put together like a badass crew of, in this case, they'll throw an entomologist. They had like a wildlife photographer from Montana. They put in like adventurers. They put in all these people and they go out into the fucking woods, look for this bee. And they did, and they found it. It's like somebody put together the Ocean's 11 of bee finding teams.
They should
and
make
went
a
out.
Movie about this.
Yes, they actually are, actually. They're making a documentary.
Justify out. Your presence as an archaeologist on this crew.
Badass. I'd be the crew badass. I'd be the Jesse Ventura, if it was Predator. Like I'd be Jesse Ventura.
You know what? I'm going to pre-apply as a badass to try to take whatever slot.
You don't have the badass credentials. I have a degree in badassery
and archaeology.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's an undergrad degree, but I'm working on my master's in badassery.
That's what do you think? MBA? I'm getting my MBA. That's master's in badass right now.
Very, very cool. Sense. I do love just that group exists. I would love to go and do some of that stuff, especially in the far off places where you actually could still discover. You know, there are parts of the Amazon where you could still discover shit that we thought was extinct, and it would be really interesting to go try. But very, very cool group and very, very cool discovery. Article number 3, a new study has found that small, involuntary hand movements can be used to detect whether a person has learned something or not. Damien thinks this is false. Bill thinks this is true, but this one is bad science. But they did find that they could tell whether or not you had learned something by small involuntary movement of your eyes. You know, you can present information to somebody. It doesn't mean that they've absorbed it and they understand it. What they wanted to do is check whether or not there were signals coming from the brain vis-a-vis the physiology of your body that indicated that that information had been taken in, processed, and understood. And so they use these really cool eye detection machines. Actually, one of our guest scientists, Dr. Ava, uses this in some of her research. And you're basically sitting there with your head stationary, and this very advanced camera is looking at your eyes, and it can tell when you do very small movements. Now, we know from previous research that there are things people do. For instance, when they're lying, they look up and to the left, or when they're trying to do certain type of processing, your eyes move in certain fashions. What they found is that there were these tiny little wobbles that the eye did when they understood something on a computer screen, and it was basically like the, okay, got that, next. If you want to think about that as the reaction, like, okay, I understand that. Done. What's next? So you would say, Mary is 6 years old. Okay, good. I got it. I got a concept of what Mary is. And your eye would literally do this involuntary thing. Now, you didn't know you're doing it. You can't control whether or not you're doing it. But you automatically go, okay, got that information. I have processed it and understood it. Now, let's say it said something that you didn't understand. Say it said, Mary is quantum. You know, it was a nonsense statement that wouldn't make any sense. You might process those words, but you don't understand it. Your eyes don't make the movement. Similarly,
I both understood it and didn't understand it.
Right, that's the Schrodinger's eye right there. So these eye movements are essentially a kind of a computer code from your brain. Received, understood, next, right? And so your eye automatically makes this little movement, and that lets someone know. That's really interesting. Because think about what those teaching applications could be. You know, you have somebody learning something on an iPad and, you know, doing a lesson or something like that. They read it. Did they really understand it?
You could figure out at which point the logic breaks down for them.
Yeah.
Like what is your
great point.
Your sticking point?
This person learns best in this fashion because we can see exactly when it clicks in their head. Whereas otherwise, your only ability to tell is by to test them 2 days later.
Right.
If you think about it, if you taught them what they needed to learn 20 minutes into an hour-long lesson, you just wasted 40 minutes, right? So if you can, oh, boom, he's done. Good. Move on to the next thing. Boom, he's done. Move on to the next thing. This guy needs 5 more minutes. Okay, he hit it. Now move on to the next thing.
Based upon that, I think you could probably shoot a much more inspirational Requiem for a Dream. Like instead of like going to that eye shot every time they do an intravenous drug, every time you learn something new, goes to that eye shot. And at the very end, you have Keith David saying, well-argued scientific point to well-argued scientific point.
That's kind of like ass to ass, yeah. By the way, I'm surprised you didn't think that movie was inspirational. Because I, on the other hand, that was my Prefontaine. I was like,
I'm doing heroin.
Yeah, I want to get it. All right, and lastly, article number 4. New excavations of gravesite show that 4,000 years ago, the people of the Iberian Peninsula had domesticated pumas and buried them with their dead leaders. Both of you guys thought this one was bad science, and this one is bad science, meaning Bill ties for the win!
No, we're not.
Boom! Boom!
I'd like
knocking Damien out like Mike Tyson in the 80s!
Because this is all on record, I'd like whatever governing body to go back and see the point where...
Hold on, let me request it.
Where Roger Goodell and the Roger Goodell and the entire NFL officiating staff basically gave the award to Tom Brady as played by Bill.
Hold on, I will request a review.
Tom Brady would never wear a beard. There's no way.
Okay, hold on. The review just came in. They said not only is it upheld, but you get another minus point for bringing up a false issue. So, Bill, you have now won by a full point. Congratulations, Bill.
I need to start supporting the XFL.
No, they did not. They did, however, find that people of the Iberian Peninsula 4,000 years ago had domesticated foxes and were putting them in the graves of their dead people. Very, very interesting thing because foxes aren't typically domesticated. So we have a few instances of fox domestication. One happened on the Channel Islands in California. One happened in Siberia in the 1960s in a very famous and purposeful Soviet experiment. And this, basically. So foxes are kind of interesting. They're an animal that is like any other canine, should be domesticatable. But for whatever reason, we chose to go the wolf route instead of the fox route. And we got dogs, right? But I have often thought there's no reason we couldn't have gone foxes instead. And they're smaller and they might have been better for certain things because of that and take less food and et cetera, et cetera. And it turns out here's a culture domesticating foxes 4,000 years ago. Very, very cool stuff. Your clue, by the way, is, of course, the puma, also known as the mountain lion or cougar, is a New World animal and did not exist in anywhere near the Iberian Peninsula.
Shouldn't Bill lose a point for missing that clue that your staff like crammed down his throat?
I remember him getting
the clue. You just changed the answer for him. He didn't even do it himself.
I'm getting the good spirit point for not changing my answer.
Yeah.
That's how it was a tie.
You should be held to a higher standard as a scientist.
I knew the first two. I should get extra points for that.
I'm about to get my master's in badassery.
I've read your thesis on nunchucks, and it's nowhere near good enough. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 305, where you learned about a new blood test for pain, how we rediscovered the largest bee on Earth, how small involuntary eye movements can tip off whether or not you've learned something, and how people on the Iberian Peninsula 4,000 years ago domesticated foxes. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 306.
I guess I don't understand how they couldn't find the world's largest bee for 40 years. Ann Coulter has been in plain sight forever.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.